Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And that is launched out to deep left field. Big fly for Mike Trout. This is ground ball to second base. Rhett Hinkle falls down, picks it up, fires the first. The Angels have no hit. The Seattle Mariners. It's gone. Big fly for Anthony Rendon.
Hey guys, I'm Alex Curry.
This is Joe Adell here with the Los Angeles Angels. This is
Brendan Marsh.
This is Chris Rodriguez.
You're listening to the All Angels Podcast.
We're going streaky!
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am Dan Garcia and joined once again, pitch hitting for Chris, Mike Brown. How you doing?
Hey, Daniel. Happy to be on again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Chris is celebrating a family birthday, so obviously something a little more important, but kind of unfortunate because we are on a little streak as Angel fans, and he's not here to enjoy it. So let's get into it right away, obviously with a three-game series opening up against Kansas City. Kind of a disappointing split, I think, when they faced the Seattle the series before this. How did you feel about it? Were you kind of disappointed with the split?
I felt a lot of momentum in those two middle games, especially after Iglesias had that crazy save on, I think it was Friday night, where he came in and just shut it down. It's probably the most electric Angels pitching performance we've seen in like over the course of a couple innings in a very long time. So, yeah, after that, I was like, oh, man, this team's going to get on a roll. Didn't happen right away, but I think the team is it's definitely playing a lot better now. But yeah, I would have loved to have gotten that Sunday game against the Mariners, but just didn't work out.
So we started this game, obviously, Monday. Bundy still looking for his first victory of the year, which is kind of surprising. We are, about a month away from the All-Star break, and Bundy's still looking for his first W. But he would get some run support early when Anthony Rendon comes up and does this.
What happens on the payoff? It's on its way. It's grounded through the left side. It's going to be a base hit. Shohei Ohtani's going to be waved home. He better hurry. Here comes the throw. He'll score. And an RBI hit by Anthony Rendon gives the Angels a 1-0 lead.
So obviously a 1-0 lead right off the bat, it feels like, with the Angels. But that wasn't it in that inning. After Jared Walsh walk, Max Stassi, who has been on fire recently, and we'll talk about a little bit at the end of the series, comes up and continues to deliver.
Into center field, hangs up, but not long enough to be caught. It's an RBI. The Angels add another, and they lead it. Mad Max keeps just hitting and hitting and hitting since getting healthy. 2-0.
So 2-0, real quick. You already like how it's going. Jose Iglesias would ground into a fielder's choice, which make it 3-0 on that fielder's choice. But then Juan Lagares comes up still in the first inning and gives Bundy all the run support he needs.
Juan Lagares. Lagares into right field, down for a base hit. The Angels lead it 4-0. Oh, a two-out RBI feels good.
And Sutt kind of said it there. Two-out RBI does wonders, and especially when it seems like those kind of opportunities are usually going against the Angels. So Angels up 4-0 at the end of the first inning. You had to be really feeling confident that Bundy's going to get his first victory in this game.
Yeah, definitely. And especially since the kid that was starting for the Royals, Jackson Coar, was getting his first major league start. I don't think he made it out of the first, right? I think old friend Irvin Santana ended up coming into the game. But it's nice to get those runs so early. Can't say I was 100% confident yet, just because of we had the rest of the game and given how the bullpen's been. But that was definitely a nice pickup.
Did you know, did you know Irvin was on the Royals? Did you know he was still in Major League Baseball?
No, I know that he had pitched maybe like two seasons ago for the Twins.
That's the last I remember him. I didn't know he was on the Royals until, you're right, until the kid got in trouble and they cut to they cut to the bullpen and it's like, oh wow, that's the Irvin Santana who, and they kind of mentioned it too during the game, through a no hitter with the Angels back when the against Cleveland,
right,
you know, a handful of years back, and I was really surprised he was still pitching, but hey, good for him. He came in and actually did a really good job.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad. He kind of looked the same, was still kind of pumping fastballs at a pretty decent clip. So yeah, I mean, he looked okay. We got a few runs off of him, so I'm not going to complain.
Exactly. Well, in the second, Bundy would get in a little bit of trouble after a Soler home run. Bundy gives up an RBI double to Hunter Dozier, and it makes it 4-2. And I think at this point, myself included, I think I might have actually put something on Instagram about Bundy and his he continues to struggle. He continues to, you know, be what he was last year. You know, is that a situation of him just maybe still not healthy, or do you think he's just kind of coming down to earth a little bit from last year?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, with the 60 game season, it's kind of really hard to get a real glimpse into how anybody is really performing just because it's such a small sample size. I mean, I think we would have already wrapped up the season a couple of days ago if we were in another 60 game season. So it's been a tale of two 60 game seasons really for Bundy so far, you know. It's really hard to say. I mean, I think he's definitely, his fastball is getting crushed a lot more, pretty much similarly to how he was getting hit hard when he was with the Orioles. You know, his fastball gets absolutely crushed when he's not placing it and when he's not setting that up with some of his off speed pitches that work really well. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And he seems, and you kind of mentioned too, he seems to be getting hit hard. Not all of them are leaving the yard, even though it seems more of them than usual are. And even in this game, in the first inning, was it Keen Wong had to make a great catch against the wall to rob a home run.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is that Keen Wong, that was literally his second opportunity to make an out in the outfield in his whole major league career. Mm-hmm. And he has to jump to rob a home run. But it just seems like Bundy is getting hit harder more than usual, and that's kind of something to look out for as the year goes on. But in the fourth, Fletcher would get that one run back with this base hit.
David on 3-2, ground ball, center field, base hit. Here comes Lagares. He will score. 5-2 Angels. Fletch gets it done.
So 5-2, obviously you get that run back, three-run lead. You're feeling a little more confident at this point. Again, Bundy hasn't really been struggling after that second inning, so I will give him that whatever it seemed like it was bugging him or trying to work something out, he did end up settling down after that.
Yeah, for sure. He ended up, you know, pitching a pretty decent game after that, and I was kind of surprised after getting hit so hard kind of in previous games, and then, you know, you're talking about the hard contact that was made in that first inning. He was able to come through and you know, Wong has played, going back to Wong, he's played really well defensively. You know, he's made a couple nice catches even outside of that game out there in right field. That's the one thing that, you know, given, you know, the absence of Fowler, they've been able to put some guys out there that can play good defense, whether it's Ward or Wong. So I think Bundy ended up with a nice, pretty nice line. I think he went six innings.
Yeah, so Bundy ended up going 5 2/3, 6 hits, 2 earned runs. Again, those 2 earned runs were in the second inning. No walks, only 2 strikeouts, but still, like you mentioned, a good outing of 5 2/3. So he does qualify for the win. And after this Matt Stassi home run, he is all but guaranteed.
Stassi, right field, well struck, toward the wall, Max gone! Wow, that ball carried!
So at the end of 5, it is 7-2. And that's pretty much, like I said, all they would need for Bundy to get his first victory of the year. They did end up adding a run later in the game off of Bach. I don't know how often you see that, but it's kind of crazy. This game and then obviously the Tuesday game, 2 Bachs in the series. I can't remember the last time I seen a Bach, let alone 2 in one series. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, that's wild. That's wild. But Stassi continues to hit, man. I put him back in my fantasy lineup as my catcher since he's come back, and he's kind of been carrying my fantasy team, which is kind of crazy. He hasn't let up really since last season. So maybe we're looking at like a top 5, top 6, 7 catcher in the league, really. If he continues this all season, he's got to enter the conversation. So
yeah, I think two of the biggest questions offensively coming into this year was, you know, kind of the same question for two different guys. Jared Walsh, did what he did in that last month, was that for real? And it's looking like it's pretty legit. And then now what Stassi did developing his bat last year, was that for real? And it looks like, you know, staying healthy, it is. And you hope that, you know, for him, for Max, that it does, he does stay healthy, because when he's on the field, you can definitely tell a difference. Yeah. Another guy that made his return in this game, he was activated in the Seattle series, didn't get on the mound, was Chris Rodriguez. He did go an inning in a third, gave up three hits, one earned run, no walks, one strikeout. And like I said, this is his first appearance since May 5th. So for fans like us and you know, people that know the bullpen has been struggling at times, to see him back in that bullpen had to feel kind of relieved, kind of, you know, maybe a little less weight on their shoulders.
Oh, for sure. I think he gave up a couple hard hit balls, but other than that, he kind of got out of the inning without any kind of further damage. But yeah, it's great to see him come back. He got activated a few days before that appearance, I believe. And I was kind of wondering, in the Seattle series, I was like, why haven't we seen C-Rod yet? But he makes an appearance there. Great to have him back. Electric arm. We all know that. So.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned too, you got hit hard twice in this outing, and one of them obviously was for a run. But I think that's kind of normal with a kid coming back from an injury, maybe not necessarily trusting his stuff yet, or not even his stuff, but like the health part of it, as far as like, okay, I got to make sure my shoulder doesn't hurt after this. But like I said, it was great to see him out there, and definitely will help this bullpen going further, because he is going to be a guy that can eventually get two innings, three innings, you know,
right. You
know, maybe in the future, maybe he does make a spot start at the end of the year or something like that, but a guy that definitely to keep an eye on. But the Angels do win the Monday game 8-3 to kick off the series against the Royals. Granted, the Royals are struggling. I think last time we had you on, we kind of talked about our top 10 from the first time we did it, and the Royals were up there and obviously did not make the top 10 this go around, but still a team that can take advantage of certain opportunities, and it just seemed like they weren't able to this game.
So now for sure. Go ahead.
So now we go to Tuesday's game against the Royals again. And in the bottom of the first, the only other home run I've seen hit this far that sticks out in my mind, it's a Joey Gallo home run that was about 3 years ago, three seasons ago, but Ohtani absolutely uncorks this.
We'll get ready to bat. 2-2, he lifts this ball high, and he hits it deep out into right center field. It is way out of here. Tuesday night, bottom of the first inning. It's already showtime.
470 feet it was measured at. That was an absolute bomb when he hit it. I was looking in the other direction for something. I can't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that contact, my head whipped around so fast, and I think I even said a loud whoa. Uh-huh. And I scared my wife, because she was doing something. She was on her phone and she's like, "What?" I'm like, "Just wait." And then it just showed where that ball landed, and that was crazy.
Yeah, that was wild. And yeah, going back to that, yeah, they mentioned it during the broadcast that the Gooby said it reminded him of a home run that Gallo hit off of, I think, Richards a few seasons ago, and ended up on that grass slope right there, right next to kind of the seats over there in right field. But yeah, that's got to be one of the furthest home runs I've seen hit there. And obviously, it's the furthest of Shohei's career so far. So almost 500 feet. Makes me want to see him in the home run derby even more. So
that was going
to
be my next question. That, you know, with the home run derby being now in Colorado at elevation, I think as a baseball fan in general, I would love to see that. As an Angel fan, with Trout out and him probably not coming back till after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
I'm kind of torn. But if I'm a baseball fan from Colorado and I just want to go out and watch it, I'm hoping he's out there. And that, like I said, that's like a month away. So
yeah,
hopefully we'll get an answer one way or the other soon.
Yeah, it's tricky because you want him to participate. You want kind of the larger baseball world. I mean, the baseball world has already taken notice of him, but you want him to put on a show. But yeah, it's tricky because a lot of hitters sometimes will say that, oh, the home run derby messes with your swing. And if there's anyone that's got kind of a wild kind of thing going on with his stance and his swing, it's definitely Ohtani. You know, there's times where he looks kind of bad at the plate, but when he gets a hold of one, he really rips into it. So I'm siding for wanting to see him in the derby for sure.
And I forgot the exact stat, but he's like top five in barrel rates as far as, you know, when he hits it, it's considered, I think a barrel is considered anything over like 85 or 90 miles per hour off the bat. And it's kind of interesting you say about the whole swing issue with the home run derby during this game on Tuesday. I don't know if you were able to get the feed or you end up getting the feed, but this was Garrett Anderson and their player takeover.
Yep.
Who obviously won a home run derby in his time. And they kind of, you know, I don't think it was after this home run, but it did come up later when Ohtani was a bat as far as his approach, Garrett Anderson's approach for a home run derby. And he, who do you hear from? Oh, Troy Glost, who did the year before. And he said, just take your BP swings. That's all you need to do. Don't try to kill it or anything like that. And I feel if Ohtani, if someone, you know, relays that message down to Ohtani, I feel like that too is all he would need to really compete in a home run derby like that, where just take your nice, easy batting practice swings. Cause I think he has enough already kind of easy power that he doesn't need to really, you know, try to hit it to the moon. I mean, for we would love that, but I don't think he needs to do all that to really compete in something like that.
Yeah, I would love to see him also get an at bat and pitch like an inning in the All-Star game too, and be in the home run derby. Maybe that's asking too much, but I think everyone would love to see that. So,
oh, absolutely. And the GA thing, I don't know. If, like I said, I don't know if you were able to get that feed, but that was a really cool. I like how they're doing bringing the older guys back. That's something that we've always talked about. Like, why don't the Angels seem to embrace their past as much as a lot of other teams? And it seems like this year, at least in that way, they are, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I caught parts of it. They brought Figgins back, and he had a lot of great comments about that World Series team coming back, you know, from being down like, you know, 19-30 or whatever their record was. I don't remember now, but yeah.
0-1, yeah. Or even two in 0-1. I think they said they lost I think, was it like 90 games or something like that to kind of bounce back?
Yeah, I think at the end of 01, they were 40 games behind the Athletics or something like that, he said. Yeah, which is crazy.
So after that absolute bomb by Ohtani, the Angels were up 2-0. It would stay that way until, again, this guy, Max Stassi, comes up and hits another two-run home run in the third.
And Max Stassi will be the next hitter. Here's the next pitch. He swings at that one and lifts that ball high, and he hits it deep out to left field. It is out of here! Second night in a row, Max Stassi is homered.
And you hear Terry Smith mention it. Second home run in two nights. And what I like about it is that they're to opposite fields. You know, obviously one he went oppo and the one he pulled down to left field over the short wall. But still, I like the fact that he's using the whole field. And I think that shows his maturity as far as, you know, the his at bats and over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Astros really weren't able to tap into this version of Max Stassi. I mean, he was really kind of a backup catcher for them. And since coming to the Angels, yeah, I know he had that one season when he first came over. I think he came over in the trade for man, I wish I remembered now. But yeah, as an Astro, not great. And the last two seasons as an Angel, he's just been very more than I'd bargain for. So,
oh, definitely. I think he came over the middle of the season, like you said, in a trade. The rest of that season, the 19 season, was kind of the same where he was struggling. I think he maybe batted like 220 or something like that. But then 2020 happened, which surprised a lot of people. And then obviously he's whatever he found out or worked out in 2020 is definitely translated to this season. Again, just keeping him on the field, it makes a world of difference. But kind of speaking of the home run derby, it would continue for the Angels in this game when Jose Iglesias comes up later in the game.
And the next delivery. This is lifted high in the air. This ball is going to get out as well. Iglesias has hit one out to the bullpen area.
And then later in that same inning, with two outs, we get another home run, this time from Justin Upton.
Justin Upton will be the next batter.
This one's hit hard and deep to the gap in left center field. Upton looks up. This one's not coming back.
Well, Upton's been hitting a lot of home runs lately, and he hits one here. Don't give it to you.
So obviously, Upton, Iglesias, two home runs, two solo shots in the fourth inning. The home run ball was huge this game, and it was nice to see the Angels connect and get some hard hit balls.
Yeah. When Iglesias, since coming back from that injury, I think there was a couple games where he started off and he was kind of he had a really bad game when he first came back, struck out a couple of times. But yeah, it's good to see him kind of bounce back and start to produce again. But yeah, when Upton in that leadoff spot is a different guy.
Weird.
And I think I texted you. I was like, man, I can't remember a time where I've seen Upton take so many good pitches where, like, he'll take his walks now and he'll take his walks and then he'll connect with one. And when he connects, he's probably got like a top five, top six, like prettiest swing in baseball when he really connects. It's just so, so fluid and nice and not too violent, just like really nice.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to see that Upton in the leadoff spot. And you're right. You text me about the walks, and it's like, well, it's like that's what the leadoff guy does. He just, you know, gets on base how he can. You know, the traditional mm-hmm. leadoff guy. It's just nice to see that Upton is doing that, but is also able to do stuff like that where he's able to hit a home run. I think what three home runs now are like in the first inning where he's like the legit leadoff guy. So
yeah,
it is kind of crazy when you saw that. I can't see them. You know, even though Fletcher, you saw him get an RBI hit earlier on Monday, mm-hmm. even though he seems to kind of be turning around a little bit in that ninth spot, I still can't see them taking Upton out of that leadoff spot for any, you know, anytime soon, as long as he's, like I said, like taking your, like you said, taking the walks and hitting home runs. I mean, that's something that's really nice to have at any part of the lineup for sure.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Madden was the coach of the Cubs and he put Rizzo in the leadoff spot a few times, I think for extended periods, and Rizzo kind of really flourished in that leadoff spot too. So Madden's got something weird with like sluggers batting in the leadoff spot, but yeah, it's worked out really well for Upton so far. And I think you can tell that he thrives off of it because he just feels a little different now. Yeah. You can tell he likes it. So,
yeah, and you know, not this time, obviously, because the game was already in the fourth, fifth inning. But I don't know if it is like when he's a true leadoff guy in the first inning, is it just maybe the pitchers aren't settled in? You know, they're, you know, especially with the Angels being the home team sometimes, you know, the guy had to go warm up, sit in the dugout and then come back out kind of deal. And he's able to take mm-hmm. advantage of that. I don't know. But whatever it is, it's working. What's the saying? Don't try to fix
it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what the Angels need to do right now because it seems to be working great. So Andrew Haney, the starting pitcher in this game, end up going 6 2/3, six hits, one earned run, and that came in the seventh inning with two outs. So this was like really late in the game. I think they said even too on the broadcast that this was his first time in the seventh inning recording an out. But when you're able to get, you know, like I said, 6 2/3, one run, two walks, seven strikeouts. I mean, that's an absolute great outing by Andrew Haney in this game.
Yeah, it's you know, for every two bad Haney starts, we always get one of these starts, you know, where he kind of really comes up and just like really becomes kind of the ace of the staff, you know, every so often like this. But then, you know, he'll have a couple rough starts or he'll have a couple average starts. But yeah, he's got like maybe three or four starts like this over the course of any season, where he comes out and is just dominant. So this is one of those starts where Haney kind of came out and did his thing, like he does a few times a year. So just would hope to see more of this, but
yeah, I mean, well, like it does look like he has found something in his last three starts. He has gone 18 2/3 innings. So he's been out there quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Five earned runs, opponent's batting average is .217 with seven walks and 19 strikeouts. So hopefully, you know, like I said, that's the last three starts. Hopefully whatever he found, it continues to grow. But you're right. I think with Haney, it has been a consistency issue, just like with a lot of these pitchers. And we'll talk to Griff about Griffin Canning, you know, with the next game. But it just seems like there's a great game in there with these guys. And all of a sudden, the next one, you're kind of asking yourself, like scratching your head, like what happened? And so mm-hmm. It's great to just get this win. Get the confidence. I truly believe some of it is just confidence, you know, feeling that your stuff works. And, you know, with a team that's been struggling at Kansas City, maybe this is a perfect time to kind of build up that confidence. But Taylor Ward also adds another home run late in the game in the eighth inning.
Here's the pitch. This is hit well into left center field. It's traveling deep and it is out of here. Taylor Ward has just hit the fifth home run of the night for the Angels in this game.
Yeah, so you heard it there. The fifth home run of the game, three of them were two-run home runs. And I kind of said it, I think, two podcasts ago or three podcasts ago. It's like, all these home runs are great. The Angels are hitting. But the majority of them are coming with no one on base.
Yeah.
You know, solo shots. And what's to say? You can always, you know, solo shots won't kill you. It's the ones with people on.
Right.
Now that they're able to get guys on, it obviously has expanded their, you know, I kind of mentioned it with some friends. This last series has been great for the run differential
mm-hmm,
because,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've been able to put up multiple runs and multiple home runs in games. And it's just great to kind of see now guys on base and the guys behind them taking advantage of it and hitting a home run or getting them in.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder about Ward. You know, he's definitely shown a little more than I kind of expected. And he's kind of turned it up lately as well, a little bit, was showing a little bit of power. And defensively, he's great. You know, I love seeing him out there in right, or he was in center, I think, the last game. So, you know, I wonder if there's a more of a kind of a backup role, even if guys like, you know, Trout come back. Maybe it's a mix of Lagares and Ward out there in right field or whatever it may be. But as long as Upton stays hot and Trout comes back, we're really looking at right field as being kind of the open spot. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, Ward has been pretty good.
Well, like I don't think he's going to be a type of guy that gets a lot back in this situation. But like you mentioned, you have Lagares. When Trout gets back, you're going to have Lagares. You're going to have Wong, which can be that fourth, you know, guy in a pinch, can play outfield. You're going to probably eventually call up Joe Adell the way he's killing in AAA. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Ward is one of those guys that the Angels kind of dangle out for maybe a team that needs some kind of offensive pop, you know, especially if he continues. Obviously, it all depends if he continues his kind of his hot streak. Right. And he's shown with everyday at bats or close to everyday at bats what he can do. So I think he'll be a really interesting guy to see. Whether it's a sell or maybe it's the Angels are buying, he'll be part of a package to bring a bigger name in. But it'll be interesting to see where he fits in that situation, because you're right. You're going to have kind of an overload of outfielders once Trout gets back. And you know, once you think Adell's going to be ready and Wong has seemed to show that he's fine there, you know?
Right. Yeah, they'll have to fit. I mean, it's a good problem to have when you have good depth pieces like that, but they'll have to figure it out for sure.
So, like I said, the Angels win Tuesday night's game, 8-1, 4-3-game series. That means they are now automatically going to win the series, and that's been their biggest issue is winning series. Had a couple splits between the A's and the Giants and the Mariners, but now that they finally won a series, that's really good. And now they go for the sweep on Wednesday night with Canning on the mound. One of these guys, again, like we said, last outing, he went like 3 1/3, I believe. But that outing before that, he went into the sixth inning, or he got through six innings. So, again, one of those things where he looks great and then he struggles. And then this time he looks great. So how do you feel about Canning and his kind of maturity, I guess, because he is still fairly young?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'll use this example. Gooby was mentioning that, and Cannon gets this comp a lot where they compare him to Trevor Bauer. And Gooby was saying on the broadcast the other night that it took Bauer a few years to kind of really develop into the guy he's been now. And, you know, both UCLA products, both kind of have a similar build, although Bauer's a little bigger now. But yeah, I think Canning is still kind of in that developmental phase where the stuff is really good, and you know, he'll go a couple innings where you're like, wow, you know, his stuff is looking great. He's striking out guys. Then he gets into a little bit of trouble, not trusting his stuff, as they say. But yeah, I think he's somewhere in the middle of a developmental stage still a little bit. But I would say by next season, if we haven't seen more of a consistent kind of thing from him, I'd start to get a little worried, but it might take another couple seasons before we really say, wow, he's like a solidified number two guy on this rotation now. So still a year or two away from really figuring out kind of what kind of guy he is. But I think the potential is still there. I'm not down on him at all. Right. There's still more to see with him.
Yeah. And I think it's for him especially. And I guess this is kind of also on affects Andrew a little bit. Heaney, 2019 was really hard as far as the Tyler Skaggs passing. Those two guys were really close to him as far as guys in the rotation. Obviously, everyone knows how close Tyler and Andrew were, but I think shortly after the passing of Tyler, Griffin Canning kind of, you know, looked up to him and kind of was like picking his brain, kind of the guy he went to when he was having questions, and that hit him really hard. I think the first start after the Skaggs death, he was visibly emotional after the game. So in that 2019 season, I'm thinking, man, did he just not feel it that last half? And maybe that hinders the development a little bit. And then you got 2020, which is just kind of batshit crazy on its own. Did that you know, hinder his development a little bit. And now you're back in 2021. Mm-hmm. Things are back to normal as far as playing every day and all that stuff. So, I'm interested to see how that maybe not. Again, you won't know this unless you talk to the guy. But I can see a pathway to where maybe that kind of slowed down his progression. But now that everything's kind of back to normal, maybe he kind of puts his foot on the accelerator a little bit and can develop. And I love the comp to Bauer. For as much as I don't like Bauer the guy, mm-hmm. but like his first All-Star game was at 27.
Right.
You know, exactly. So it's like all these pitchers are, I think Canning's 24, 25. Mm-hmm. So who knows what he's going to be in two more seasons. He can very easily be an All-Star in two seasons. Maybe not a Cy Young, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he is a All-Star at that point. Real quick shout out. I want to say Wayne Knox watching from Wisconsin. That's cool. Didn't even know we had anybody in Wisconsin. So shout out to Wayne. I really appreciate it. So getting back to the game a little bit, like I mentioned, Griffin Canning on the mound, hoping to bounce back from his last start. And he would get in a little bit of trouble in that first inning, like you mentioned. It always seems like that first or second inning, he takes a little while to get his command and get into the game with a leadoff single. He would end up getting the bases loaded with two outs, ends up getting out of the inning with a ground ball, but he does throw 24 pitches in that one inning, which is not great if you're trying to go deep into games. At that point, did you think it would be a long game for the Angels?
Yeah, I did. What inning did you say that was that he got
that
into
was
that
the
trouble?
First inning of the game, yeah.
Yeah, and then he escaped it kind of barely. But, yeah, I wasn't too high on him at that point. And then I think he had the second inning that was like eight pitches.
Eight pitches in the second inning, which kind of eat. I think I text you or Chris.
Yeah.
Like, well, that helps the average when you see it that way.
Yeah, that was one of the most efficient innings that an Angels pitcher has had, Angels starting pitcher has had all season. So after that, I was like, okay, like this,
we'll see what happened.
You know, this looks better. So
yeah, definitely. Like when you get that eight inning, and then now you're looking at what is it going to be like? You know, 32 pitches over two innings still isn't great, but considered the alternative, what it could have been, a plus in Canning's outing. So it was stayed 0-0 all the way to the bottom of the third when Anthony Rendon comes up.
Here's Rendon at the plate, and here it comes on Rendon. He swings, lifts it in the air in the right center field. Chasing after it are the outfielders, and that ball is going to bang off the wall. That's going to score a pair. Well, he didn't hit a homer, but he drives in both runners. It's 2-0 Angels.
So Anthony Rendon seems to be heating up now. Something that Angel fans have been waiting for mm-hmm. for a while, and some of these injuries have kind of slowed that process. But Anthony Rendon really starting to step up right now and be that RBI guy that the Angels need.
Yeah, it's been tough. You know, he was put on the IL twice early, very, very early on in the season with, you know, he fouled the ball off his shin. And I think he had a groin injury at some point before that. But yeah, he's hopefully finally getting into it. I feel like we've said it a couple times now, like, oh, this might be the time when Rendon turns it around, or 2 weeks later, oh, this might be the time he's starting to turn it around. So hopefully this is the time now, because he's still young. He's still kind of in his prime. So, yeah, you expect the production to go up, you know, maybe when the – I don't know, maybe as the summer months come on, he turns it up a little bit. But, yeah, hopefully this is kind of the start of a stretch here for him.
And it's crazy. And you kind of mentioned it earlier where if this was another COVID season, if you will, this season would be over. It would be mm-hmm. at 32 games or close to it now. And we would never see this Rendon as far as him heating up and getting base hits because the season would be over.
Right.
So, another thing where it showed last season was so kind of compacted and you didn't get to see mm-hmm. the real players, you know, for the most part. Because like you said, you know, we're at 60 something games now, and this season would be over right now if it was back then. So again, he gets the game. He gets the Angels up 2-0. Canning would give up one run in the top of the fourth, and it would stay that whole way until the sixth inning when the Angels, busted right open first with this Iglesias at bat.
To the right side, down for a base hit. For sure, one scores. Iglesias hurrying on around. They will stop the runner at third. It's two bags. It's an extra run. 3-1 Halos.
So obviously then the next batter, Keen Wong, gets his first multi RBI game of the of his career with this base hit right here.
Fights that one off. Base hit center field. Here comes Juan Iglesias. We'll head to the plate. Wong drives in a pair.
So at this point now, it's 5-1. Angels take the lead. We kind of mentioned him a little bit. Keen Wong, again, Colton Wong's little brother, and it seems like he's now trying to make a little name for himself. And he's actually doing, like you mentioned, a really good job, not only in the field, but coming up with base hits at good times, getting on base and stuff like that. Looks like a guy that is definitely a utility type that you definitely need around a team and on a team that wins.
Yeah, I mean, he's come up big on, you know, we were saying earlier, a few defensive plays out there in right field. I mean, he robbed that homer during that Bundy start, and then he comes up really big here with this knock to drive in too. So, he's kind of a nifty little player, nice piece to have for sure. I mean, if they can get anything like this from him, I think that'd be a bonus.
Yeah, definitely a guy that shows that he should be up and stay up. And
right.
When some of these decisions now, when Trout comes back, who they DFA or send mm-hmm. down, like he's making it really hard for the Angels to send him down. He's been really productive and really good in the outfield as well. Canning would end up going 6 2/3, giving it 5 hits, just the 1 run in the fourth, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, missed a lot of bats too. I think I noticed that too. His whiff rate was up there quite a bit. So he was, after that first inning, seemed to really be kind of locked in after that, but another good outing by Canning. He would get the W. Angels would add one more run in the eighth on a fielder's choice. So the final score was 6-1. Angels sweep the Kansas City Royals, and I don't care who it is, sweeping a team, you know, is a good thing.
Yeah. And it's the first sweep of the season. So extra kudos to the Angels for getting their first series sweep. In June. So yeah, it's been that kind of year, but great all around. Couldn't have come to a team that kind of has had the Angels number obviously in recent seasons like the Royals. So always good to sweep the Royals.
Yeah, and you even think about it too, the series that was played early in the year in Kansas City. I mean, that was a hard series for the Angels too. I think they lost. I think they lost 2-1 in that series. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you know, Perez was killed him the whole. Salvador Perez killed him the whole series in that.
Yes.
In that, or the whole time in that series, and it just seemed like they were able to hold those type of guys, their big guys, to limited damage, and I think you needed that. And you know, for as much talk as the starters get with the Angels, and understandably. In the series, you got 19 innings pitched, 17 hits, only four earned runs, 4 walks, and 15 strikeouts from the starters in this series. I mean, you'll take that every single time. That's a great series for starters.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it takes, you know, beating up on these bad teams to really kind of get things rolling, even against kind of the better teams that they're going to face down the line. You know, you build up confidence like this, exactly, for your starters and the team. So yeah, it's a great series to kind of lean on and move forward on, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, you put up runs on the board, starting pitchers probably feel a little more relaxed to go a little bit deeper. And it's crazy because the bullpen only had to pitch 8 innings in those 3 games. And it changes everything when the bullpen doesn't have to come in the fourth.
Right. Yeah. These guys have been taxed pretty heavily so far this season. So, it's great not to see, you know, Steve Cishek every game. So, it's definitely nice.
So again, great series by the Angels. They sweep the Royals. Off today, Thursday night, as we record this, and on their way to Arizona this weekend, which is a good thing. Another team that's been struggling, and if they sweep, they're at 500, or I think it might be a game above 500. But Ohtani on the mound Friday, you know he's going to bat. NL rules. How much are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, huge. You know, this is a team that I don't think has seen Ohtani. I don't remember the last time we played the D-backs, honestly, but I don't know if they've seen Ohtani. At the same time, we haven't really seen much of their guys. That always concerns me a little bit. As bad as the Diamondbacks are with playing a team with some pitchers that, you know, a lot of these Angel players probably haven't seen, that always kind of concerns me a little bit that these guys might be able to go deeper into games. But there's no faking it. You know, the D-backs are bad. They're really bad. So, you know, the Angels need to come out of this with a sweep. I feel like the Angels haven't been two games under 500 in weeks. So to come out above 500 in this series at the end of the series would be huge, especially going into Oakland, I think, is the series after that.
Mm-hmm. So you have Friday, Otani's on the mound in Arizona. That's a regular 6:30 start. Saturday, you have Alex Cobb on the mound, a guy that who has been seen to be getting better and better since coming back from that blister. Mm-hmm. That's a 1 o'clock start. And then Patrick Sandoval, 1 o'clock start on Sunday. I like the Angels matchups as far as pitching, you know, three guys actually with Otani that have all coming off of good starts, all coming off of, you know, and Cobb's, you know, talking about him, a couple good starts.
Yeah.
Otani gives you the automatic advantage. You're going to be pretty much putting your regular lineup out there. You don't have to worry about it. So you're kind of playing NL versus AL rules with a DH. So that should give the Angels an advantage also. But Sandoval, you know, from everyone saying, can put the ball over the fence a little bit, taking BP at Angel Stadium on Wednesday before the game. So we'll see how that goes. But I really like the Angels matchups coming into this series for sure against Arizona.
Yeah, Cobb especially, I'm looking forward to his start after that gutsy outing that he had last time around where he gave up that grand slam, and then that was kind of all the damage he gave up, and then he kind of really settled down after that and had one of the gutsier starts of recent memory for the Angels. So, yeah, excited to see him maybe build off of that a little bit and see where that goes. Sandoval, I think his last outing was pretty good as well. So happy, you know, excited to see what he continues to do and hopefully keep building off of the talent that he has.
Yeah, definitely. Another one of those young guys that you hope, like Canning, can continue to develop and move forward with the development as the year goes on. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about the City Connect jerseys and then obviously a little bit about the sticky situation, if you will, MLB finds itself with the foreign substance. We'll be right back after this. You work hard and you play hard, so treat yourself and stock up for summer barbecues with Kansas City Steak Company. Visit KansasCitySteak.com and get 10% off your order and free shipping with code SD at checkout. From classic steak cuts to USDA Prime to American-style Kobe, hard-to-find specialty cuts, and more, Kansas City Steaks has everything you need to fire up the grill. They make it super easy. Each order from Kansas City Steaks is flash-frozen and delivered directly to your home. Satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Imagine relaxing in the backyard with family while enjoying steakhouse-quality meals from Kansas City Steaks. Try their butter tender filet mignon, Kansas City Strip, juicy steak burgers, all beef jumbo hot dogs, and even a complete meal combos. Bring the steakhouse to your home this summer with Kansas City Steaks. Go to KansasCitySteaks.com and get 10% off your order and free shipping with code SD. That's KansasCitySteaks.com, promo code SD. Again, that's KansasCitySteaks.com, promo code SD. Sports, culture, takes. TakeLine has it all. TakeLine is a weekly podcast hosted by Emmy Award winner Jason Compression and former WNBA champ Renee Montgomery. That's a fast-paced exploration of the NBA and the world of sports and culture. Each week, Jason and Renee talk about the games, players, conversations, and issues that run both on and off the court. Follow now to hear TakeLine every Tuesday wherever you get your podcast. And we are back again. Thank you for the sponsors. So let's talk about a little bit about these City Connect uniforms. The newest one just dropped, I believe, earlier this week. So let's kind of look at some of them that have come out already. And the first one we can look at real quick, I think it is in order, is the Boston Red Sox. What are your initial thoughts about the Boston Red Sox and the City Connect uniforms they put out?
Yeah, these ones don't really say Red Sox to me. You know, it says like UCLA to me, especially the cap. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Bruins use the same kind of styled B, and it's straight up UCLA colors. I don't want to be too insensitive because I think this is tied to like the Marathon, Boston Marathon or something.
Those are the Marathon colors, like the I guess the the marathon always has these this color scheme or something like
right.
that.
So, you know, I'm not a fan, definitely not a fan. But at the same time, if they want to kind of represent the city and kind of call back to the marathon and obviously the tragedy that happened a few years ago, I think that's great. Not my favorite.
Yeah, and I think the hat has something to do with it. Like, the jerseys itself aren't bad, mm-hmm. but the hat, I wish they would have picked a different, you know, logo for Boston. Or, right. or, you know, maybe if it wasn't the B, because you're right. As a football fan that lives in Southern California, the first thing that I saw when I was looking up, I'm like, is that the Boston hat or is that a UCLA hat? I wasn't sure. So, yeah, I wish they would have maybe picked, I don't know how, it might have looked weird with a Sox logo. And that's still that color scheme. But with that yeah. E, it just seems like it's too UCLA for me. And it's just kind of like, and I'm guessing too, but if you're in Boston and you see it, you're in Boston. You probably don't even think of UCLA. So I can see how probably over there, it's a totally different story.
I think what they could have done too, is they could have made the pants yellow too. I think that would have been fire.
I think that would have been all banana, all yeah. Savannah bananas. But yeah, thanks.
They would, I mean, adding maybe some, or like maybe pinstripes to the, because I think the
or
white.
Or even a blue color, like even if maybe they go baby blue.
Yeah.
You know,
that baby blue is popular. That baby blue is really popular in baseball right now. So.
Right. Yeah. And you've seen an all blue jersey with, I mean, the Rangers, the Royals, the Blue Jays. I think I'm probably missing like one or two other teams that have like an all blue uniform. And I think I like that. So I wonder if they would have done a blue pants, it would have made it look better. But
yeah,
that is the Boston City Connect. The next ones that came out after them, ones that I really like, the Miami Marlins, and this is kind of a throwback to the Havana Sugar Kings, I think, is what this it was a minor league team in Cuba, you know, I think in the 80s or maybe even the 70s, and it was kind of a throwback to that. The red tops with the white pinstripes, this is probably my favorite out of the ones that have come out already.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. This is probably my third favorite. The Red Sox one is probably my least favorite. This is probably the next one up from that. I didn't know that there was that connection to the to that Cuban minor league team or that Cuban affiliate. So that's a cool connection. I do like the cap a lot. I think the cap is super nice with the MM and that crown. Not too big of a fan of the actual kind of red jersey with the, to me, the red and that blue kind of clash a little bit on that jersey and the white, but the pinstripes are interesting too, because the pinstripes are kind of like really spaced out more than you would normally see on like a pinstripe jersey.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So that's different. But yeah, this is probably my third favorite out of the bunch.
Yeah. So again, this is the Miami Marlins. Like I mentioned, the Sugar Kings, I believe it was the name. I think that's why they have a crown. And then there's a little patch on the side, too, that kind of, you know, it's a throwback. And I understand, like, you know, the City Connect with the Boston Marathon, the Sugar Kings. So I like the fact that they are trying to maybe find historical stuff or you know, stuff that connects the city, like the title says. But, I don't know why. I just like that red. And maybe it is because the pinstripes are a little bit different and they're not. Like you mentioned, there are spread out a little bit, so it is different. That caught my eye, but
yeah,
that was the Miami Marlins. And the next one that came up after that, the all black Chicago White Sox. This is actually really nice too. I should have put a picture of La Russa wearing his hat. I think that would be great. I should have found a photo of that, but because it does have that kind of South Side. Mm-hmm. You know, might want to watch out where you're wearing this kind of jersey and what neighborhood you're in kind of feel to it. But, you know, I like the black on black. I talked to a buddy of mine. I was on the Sunday League, the podcast, when this came out, and they're baseball guys. So it's like, oh man, it reminds me of softball uniforms. Like, I don't care. That black on black is nice with the white pinstripes. I liked it. It's not too different. Like the first two we saw, and then the next one we're going to see with the Cubs are completely different from what they normally wear.
Right.
This one seems like it's still kind of connected or still really close to what they normally wear on any other given game.
Yeah, it doesn't. Right. Because, I mean, the previous two kind of go away from the team's usual colors. But this one really kind of like plays into the White Sox colors. This is probably my favorite City Connect jersey so far. it's just super slick. The cap is really nice.
I like the cap, yeah.
If I were White Sox fans, I would ask them to kind of use this cap, because you could use this cap with their regular jerseys and it would still be like super nice.
Absolutely.
And the whole South Side thing is, yeah, it's kind of like a, you know, where are you from type vibe.
Right?
definitely repping South Side for sure. It's, you know, right across their chest. But yeah, I love these. I really love these. I think these are super nice.
And you're right, too, with the other previous two, with the Marlins and the Boston, like, you can't wear those hats with their regular jerseys. But yeah, you're right. It could be very, very easily, mm-hmm. you know, Chicago could wear these on any game in, you know, in August or whatever, July,
yeah,
for regular uniforms. Cause I like that shy. I like how, you know, that works perfectly. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's not bad. This is probably my second favorite one. of the City Connect ones that came out so far. I believe the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and I want to say San Francisco is still left this season. I know.
Are those the other ones they're rolling out just for this year?
This year, yeah. So okay. I think that the plan is that over the next like three years, like every team's going to have one. They're going to do like a handful per year. So it'll be interesting to see how some of these other teams incorporate their cities, especially like a team like Arizona, where it doesn't seem like it has a lot of mm-hmm. history. What they're going to do and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a big ass cactus in the front. I don't know, but that's something to kind of look out for. So the most recent one that came out, again, this was this week, is the Chicago Cubs. So the other Chicago team, the blue is growing on me. I wasn't a huge fan of it at first, but I love the hat. And then the kind of the dark blue with the light blue is definitely growing on me.
Yeah, they really kind of took advantage of the baby blue thing being really popular in the league right now. This is probably my second favorite one. I like how the navy blue is kind of on the pants and on the top. Mm-hmm. The whole Wrigleyville thing looks super nice. It's kind of shaped in the sign of Wrigley Stadium, or yeah, I think it's kind of in that kind of arch shape. The cap is cool. I think those colors and that star, I think that's like the flag of the
flag,
city.
Maybe. Yeah. The star, I think if you look at the city's flag, there's like three stars in the middle. Just
right.
There are colors on the top, bottom, I think white in the middle, and there's like three stars in the middle of the flag. And I think that star is kind of all over, not all over, but it's like it's there.
Yeah.
There's a side patch with it on and stuff like that. So I like, again, they're incorporating a lot of things that you would see around the city.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like this one. I think this is probably my second favorite one. Nothing too spectacular, but I just think it's pretty solid. This is a jersey they could probably wear pretty often.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that, too, because every team that has had one so far has worn it for like a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if these are going to come back around next year or maybe down mm-hmm. the line, or if it is truly just like a one and done kind of deal just to sell jerseys and get more merchandise out there. But I really like the hat. I like the colors of the hat. I like, the star in the middle of the sea. But this is probably my second favorite hat or second favorite uniform third. So I would probably go for me, Miami number one, Chicago two, Cubs three, and Boston four.
Okay, right.
How would you?
Yeah, for me, I got the White Sox, I got the Cubs, I got the Marlins, and then I got the Red Sox. Probably, yeah, in that order.
So it'll be interesting to see what they come out. It's cool. I like it. It's fun. It's different. As an Angel fan, I'm not sure what year theirs are going to come out. I do know for sure it's not this year. What would you like to see them do? What would you, color wise, is there anything in the Anaheim area that you would want them to kind of emphasize?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Orange and around the stadium, you know, for most of my life before I moved up here, it's weird. There's not, I'm trying to think of things. I mean, Orange and Anaheim are kind of known for Disneyland, obviously. But I would love to see them bring back kind of the navy blue, part of the Angels uniforms from like the 90s. You know, even like the CA, maybe call back to California a little bit, the California Angel time period. But, Yeah, I'm just tired of the red and the white. I want to see them bring back the navy a little more.
Yeah, I wish they would get into the navy a little bit more as well. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, if they maybe go like there's Wrigley or Chicago, I should say, both Chicagos for that matter, have mm-hmm. kind of held to their primary colors, especially Chicago Cubs, or not Cubs, White Sox. But the other two, Florida and Boston, have not at all. So I'm wondering if, you know, now it's kind of a, maybe they don't even have a blue, maybe they don't even have a red, maybe they, right. you know, maybe they orange, you know, orange grows, maybe, I don't know. But it'd be really interesting to see how the Angels kind of idea. I wish I got to figure out who's in charge, if the Angels are in charge of designing it, or if MLB is in charge of designing it, and see.
Yeah, it's probably some sort of collaboration between Nike and the city. And yeah, it reminds me, because the NBA has these city connect jerseys, right? Where and I feel like the NBA teams wear them probably way too much. I feel like every time I watch an NBA game, one of the teams is wearing them. But yeah, it's probably a collaboration between the team and Nike.
Yeah, so again, four out so far. I think there's another three or four left for the season. Maybe they're going four pre-All-Star break, four after All-Star break. But it's, again, it's a cool little thing. Really interested to see where the Angels go from for theirs, and that's going to be a little bit down the line. So another thing making news in baseball, you know, this week and the last couple weeks, honestly, is the foreign substance issue as far as pitchers using it to get an advantage on a baseball. One of the things that went viral this last week was Gerrit Cole when asked, has he used Spider Tech, which is a adhesive for, I guess, bandages to, do you understand what the Spider Tech stuff is? Like what it's supposed to be used for?
All I know is that when you Google Spider Tech, one of the autofills comes up is how do I take Spider Tech off of my hands, or how do I remove Spider Tech? So like, the fact that major leaguers are using that substance and it's like hard, apparently you got to Google like how to get it off your fingers.
Right.
That's crazy to me. It's like, it's supposed to be like industrial strength grip basically. So yeah.
So Gerrit Cole, hopeful Angel at one point, now New York Yankee, got asked point blank in a press conference earlier this week if he used Spider Tech, and this is his response.
I don't know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, there are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players. And, you know, I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. And I've stood pretty firm in terms of that, in terms of the communication between our peers and whatnot. You know, and I, again, like I mentioned earlier, there's, you know, this is important to a lot of people that love the game. And this is including the players in this room, including fans, including, you know, teams. And so if MLB wants to, you know, legislate some more stuff, that's a conversation that we can have, because ultimately we should all be pulling in the same direction on this.
So is that a yes or is that a no?
Yeah.
If you watch that video, and I've watched it a couple times now before this, that first pause, I think it's like 6 seconds. And the very first time I watched it, I thought my phone froze. to where I got out and like refreshed the page. I'm like, God, oh, I didn't get services buffering. Can let me refresh the page. And then I see him blinking. I'm like, oh, it's just him pausing.
Yeah.
When you hear that response from Gerrit, you know, obviously, and I don't want him to be made out like as the villain or the only one that used it, because we know it's so prevalent mm-hmm. through Major League Baseball. But you would have to think he knew something like this was coming. A question like this.
And right.
to be so unprepared was kind of shocking to me. But what was your first takeaway from watching this interview? or this question, not even the full interview, but this question.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that he's like hiding something, that he's kind of skirting the question. He tries to recover and kind of talk about how, oh, it's there's certain things that have been passed down. And I don't know, his question is just really a train wreck. He kind of hops around a little bit, going between trying to change the subject and trying to kind of deflect a little bit.
You can almost see like a hamster in the wheel, like cranking, like, okay, what do I say now? What do I, like, you can see him going through the process of like, can't say that.
Yeah.
Say that. Okay. Let me say this to buy me some time. Okay. I'm going to say that it was odd to see a professional athlete, period, not be prepared for a question, because if you spend any time around like PR people or watch any kind of interview, these guys are normally ready for these kind of things, whether it's a truthful answer or just a simple, you know, I don't know, that's something I have to think about later, like, you know, some, a general response. But you never see a guy like
really struggle,
so off guard.
Yeah, you it makes you think about kind of the Yankees PR people and, you know, kind of prepping them, you know, like, hey, this sticky substance stuff is like a hot topic, we're probably going to be asked about this. Gerrit Cole has been implicated with stuff like this. There was the guy that worked for the Angels in the clubhouse that apparently was supplying some of this sticky stuff to
visitors.
People like Gerrit Cole. I think they even called out Gerrit Cole in that article or wherever that, whatever that was. Basically, like, they have a text from Cole to the guy that worked for the Angels saying, hey, can I get some of that stuff? Or, hey, do you have any of that stuff? So he's definitely like, you know, the Barry Bonds of, you know, of the sticky substance stuff, in terms of rumors and allegations and stuff. So to not be prepared, you know, even if your PR team isn't preparing you, for him himself, as you know, people know that he's kind of the guy, the poster child for that kind of substance, for him not to even like come prepared is kind of shocking. You're right. But yeah, you know, it just seems like he's not telling the truth. It seems like he's hiding something. He didn't even give a firm answer.
Right.
So it'll be interesting, but he came out last night and pitched really well. Yeah, so we think maybe he's not using the substance, but he still pitched really well. I don't know what his if his spin rates are or not went down, but
yeah, and that's kind of the main reason why too. He even got asked this question at a certain point, because the start before Wednesday night, and at the time that's when the whole rumor, or, you know, it could be even more so than a rumor around baseball, as far as MLB coming out and say, hey, we are going to be really stringent on this rule as far as checking pitchers and make sure they don't have anything in their glove, on their hand, on their cap, all that stuff. And it came back that his spin rate from a previous start was way down, like way down. And that's kind of why he got asked this question. And you mentioned before, you played the Twins last night, did really well.
Yeah.
I don't have the spin rate numbers on it from him, but you did see some kind of a spin rate decline from Dylan Bundy this last start. Obviously, you know, he was able to kind of work through it, but part of me thinks is like some of these pitchers are going to have to now learn to adjust without this extra stuff. You know, maybe that's what it was. Maybe Bundy needed a two or three innings to kind of get used to not having whatever it was, whether it's the spider stuff or the super glue or whatever. I mean, you hear a bunch of different stuff that they use. So how do you feel about the whole foreign substance issue or that whole topic?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, players, obviously it's been known, have used sunblock, have used rosin, and, you know, a mix between rosin and sweat and sunblock, or, you know, whatever it is, and put it on their arm and get a little bit, you know, a lot of times you'll see a lot of pitchers' arms are like, wow, that arm looks shinier than just like sweat, right? So, right. So we know that they've used substances like that. And, but when you take it to the level of like a spider tack, or there's one called, I think, like pelican grip as well, where it's just like, the substance is so intense and so used for such industrial purposes that it's kind of crazy. And I think Josh Donaldson has come out and said that he has a lot of footage of pitchers doing this and using this substance.
Yeah, he's gonna put out a book after he's done playing or something about.
Yeah. And I think people have zoomed in on certain pitchers, kind of fingers kind of getting stuck together and kind of hard to kind of unstick. So as soon as you get to that and kind of the increased spin rates that you see and the decreased offense, I remember the first month or so of this season, it seemed like every pitcher was like putting up like 10 or 11 Ks each start, especially a lot of the Angels pitchers. And there was kind of a decrease in offense, and there's been a decrease in offense kind of across the board. So I think it's a matter of kind of leveling the playing field again. I think the pitchers have gotten too good. So, you know, there's always this back and forth where the hitters are too good and then the pitchers are too good. And then we're trying to find the right way to do it. You know, MLB, you know, doctors the ball and then gives us a new ball last season to try to, you know, cut down home runs. So it's this constant kind of back and forth. It's this constant back and forth of the pitchers being too good and then the ball flying too far. So it's like, it's a stance that the league has to play, but I think the league definitely has to crack down. Cause yeah, I think the pitchers are like, it's crazy. We see balls move like we've never seen them before. So.
Yeah. And someone's, I forgot who it was, but kind of compared it to like wiffle balls. Like if you ever throw a wiffle ball and you know how to throw it, that thing, you know, breaks, like it feels like breaks like 3 feet. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah.
I believe it was Jeff Passan's on a ESPN podcast said, you know, it's kind of like the drug situation. It's like for California and some other states, like, okay, we'll legalize weed. Okay. So you can use like, you know, rosin and, suntan lotion or whatever, sunblock or whatever. Cause that's cool. That's like weed.
Yeah.
But when you start using, like I said, the spider tech and it's like, but we're not legalizing like, you know, heroin, like that's right. You know, it's like, okay, let's drugs are drugs, correct, but it's like, we'll legalize weed, it'll give you this, but it doesn't mean you go out and you can start, you know, doing the other stuff. And I think that's what MLB has to do, is like, you do need something. I think pitchers do need something to for a little bit extra grip.
Yeah,
but I think they're kind of, you know, it kind of like, that's like the new steroids now. It's like,
right,
you can use supplements to help your body recover. Use certain supplements to help your body gain mass or muscle. But it's like, once you start shooting, you know, steroids into you, that's crossing the line. I think that's kind of the same situation MLB is in right now, is trying to find that. Okay, we'll give you this, but you can't go over here and use that kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they roll out kind of enforce it too, because in previous instances we've seen pitchers at random umpires go up to them and say, oh, let me see under your hat, and then, oh, okay, what's this, and then you're out of here. You know, it's like there was never a rhyme and reason for why an umpire would check pitchers in the past, and it was kind of really random and kind of strange. So I think it's going to have to be enforced kind of league-wide and with everyone, but it'll be really interesting to see how they're able to enforce it and you know, that sort of thing. So
the rule was, you know, they check the other pitcher when the, you know, opposing manager asked them to. So pretty much you had to get a complaint from the other team before the umpire goes out there. But 9 times out of 10, the other team never wanted to do it because they knew their guy was doing it.
Right.
Now with the whole, you know, MLB new theory behind it is like, okay, now umpires, you have the jurisdiction. You don't have to worry about, you know, manager X saying, go check it out. Now you can do it on your own kind of deal. So that's going to be, again, interesting. And a lot of talk came out of, like, I think 3 or 4 minor leaguers got caught with this foreign substance. They got suspended 10 games.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's going to be 10 games, which for pitchers is 2 starts, you know, that could, you know, deter some guys from using some of that extra stuff. Like I mentioned, maybe they let them slide on the pine tar, or not pine tar, the, you know, rosin and sunblock, even though 9 times out of 10, the game started like at 6:30 or later. I don't know why you need sunblock. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I agree. Like the spider tech or the pelican grip or whatever you're talking about too, the other stuff, or even here, super glue. Yeah, that stuff is kind of crazy. Cause then, yeah, that also adds extra drag to the ball that is making that thing even break even further. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this kind of plays out the rest of the year with Major League Baseball and the pitchers and even so forth. Like the players union, because half the players union is all for it and the other half of the players union isn't for it because they're pitchers. So that's going to be
right.
To see how that plays out.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, especially with the collective bargaining agreement coming up at the end of the year with the Players Association and MLB.
That's going to be fun.
Both sides hate each other, and this is going to be kind of another topic that they'll probably, you know, go at each other after. So more drama, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they start enforcing this for sure. And when.
Yeah, and win. And rumors have it this next week. Rumors have it 2 weeks from now. So definitely keep an eye out for it. Some say after the All-Star break, give guys kind of a chance to, I guess, slowly get rid of it. But, you know, we'll see what happens. So, yeah, that's some of the bigger news that had happened in Major League Baseball this week. But before we go, I'm going to bring this up one more time. Well, not one more time, but this today, and I'm sure you'll hear from us a couple more times. Our fundraiser out in the city of Fullerton on June 26th. It's a Saturday. Barrow and Stave Poorhouse. Again, that's in Fullerton, 250 West Santa Fe Avenue, Unit 20, Fullerton, California, from the hours of 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. 10% of the proceeds will be going to the Tyler Skaggs Foundation. And how it got organized, again, the Bearded Villains of the Inland Empire organized this. Johnny was part of that chapter, the Bearded Villains in the Inland Empire. He was part of that chapter. They knew him well. There was pretty much a second family, and they wanted to do a fundraiser to in Johnny's name, and they knew what we did here at Halo Haven and Angels Paint podcast with the Tyler Skaggs Foundation. So they wanted to do this fundraiser and donate the money in the name of Johnny Maggs. Again, that Saturday, June 26th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., 10% goes to the Tyler Skaggs Foundation from that day. We will be there. Chris and I will be there. Hopefully to see you there. But we are not only going to have, obviously, the beer there and talking and kind of sharing stories, stuff like that, which we're really looking forward to. But we're also going to do a little bit of a giveaway. And I'm going to solo in on myself here for it. But some of the giveaways we are going to do is I was able to meet up with Brandon Marsh in Vegas. So we have a, let's see if my light, sign ball by Brandon Marsh. We are also from Keenon Sunglasses. We have a pair of sunglasses to raffle off. Again, these are probably retailed around, I got to look it up, probably like $180, $200 sunglasses. So we have also a four tickets with parking for an Angel game, a season ticket holder that, you know, became buddies with this through this process, through Halo Haven, through the All Angels podcast, has said that he would donate his tickets for a night of the game. Again, that's four tickets. Take the family out, free parking. Tickets are great. I should have uploaded a photo. So next time we have a podcast, I will upload a photo from his seat. They're definitely great. So check it out. Come down. Again, really looking forward to meeting a lot of people that have asked us, when are we going to be in Orange County? When are we going to do anything? This is a perfect opportunity for it. So again, that's Saturday, June 26th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I'm sure we might be hanging around a little bit after that. But that 11 to 4 window is vital. That's the money goes from during that time goes to the Tyler Skaggs Foundation. And you know how much we support the Tyler Skaggs Foundation and how much we are close to them. And it means a lot for the Bearded Villains of the Inland Empire to kind of organize this and let us kind of piggyback off of it and kind of do our own thing with it as well. So really looking forward to it. Again, like I mentioned, won't be the last time you hear about it. We're honestly trying to get as many people there as we can now that stuff is kind of opening up more and more through this month. So definitely check it out again. That Saturday, June 26th in the city of Fullerton, 250 West Santa Fe Avenue, Unit 20. So definitely come and check it out. So, Mike, thank you again for pitch hitting for Chris. Really appreciate it. You're always welcome on here. Always have a good time talking baseball and Angels baseball with you. Definitely.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. You can give me a follow at Chewing Cast. But yeah, thanks for having me on. Always good to talk Angels.
Definitely check it out. Definitely check out his social media. Always tweeting stuff. Really, really, really fun to engage with on Twitter and stuff like that. So again, he kind of does more of the baseball stuff, but he also throws a little bit of Angel stuff in there as well. So for Mike, I am Daniel. This has been another edition of the All Angels Podcast.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.